Well, I figure you longtime Grizzly fans probably knew exactly what was going to happen this weekend. The Grizzlies would beat the better team and lose to the worst team, and that is what they did. We'll talk about the weekend that was. You are Locked On Grizzlies.
Locked On Grizzlies, your daily Memphis Grizzlies podcast. Part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Yeah, man, welcome in to Locked On Grizzlies. My name is Peter Edmiston. Thank you for joining me. Thank you for downloading the pod. Thank you for supporting this podcast. Thank you for being a part of it for all of you that have been for over a year now. It is really, really cool and gratifying. And I appreciate the emails and the tweets and stuff. It's really nice to hear from all of you. If you haven't already subscribed, if you're just checking it out for the first time, welcome in. Please subscribe. Click that subscribe button. It helps us tremendously. Also, if you want to leave a rating, that would be great too. 5 stars preferable. That helps us get up the charts and get the downloads and help support the pod in a whole bunch of different ways. So thank you for all of that in advance. Now, as I mentioned in the intro, Grizzlies lose on Sunday night to the Lakers after a Saturday afternoon surprise in terms of the performance against a much better Clippers team. You know, the Grizzlies typically do this, but it was the manner of the way they did it that was most surprising. They were really pretty darn in control and pretty, I'm not going to say dominant, but a very comfortable victory all in all against the Clippers that was mitigated quite a bit by a very lackluster performance against the Lakers. It's that Saturday night in LA. You don't have the game. You're already done. You're going out. I mean, hell, you get done with the game at what, you know, 3-4 o'clock LA time. Got the whole afternoon, evening to yourself. Getting set up for a very late game. Things happen, man. Things happen, and apparently some of them happened to the Grizzlies because the effort level was not there. Now, you know, that said, there are some things that kind of we could talk about with both games that are interesting, and particularly in comparing the two. But one of the things that jumps out to you right away, before we get into some of the nuts and bolts of, you know, a few of the numbers and some of the things that we saw. But just right out of the gate, this is now with the Lakers game joining the Mavericks loss in Dallas. That is the two times that Chandler Parsons has missed games due to back-to-backs. The Grizzlies have not only lost, but have looked pretty inept for the majority of the game. In each of those cases, I mean, that's Dallas's only win of the season. They're a terrible team, and they really controlled the Grizzlies in that ball game. And then, you know, the Lakers are better than the Mavericks, but not an especially great team. And the Lakers pretty much controlled the Grizzlies for most of the ball game on Sunday night. Both times without Chandler Parsons. Is Chandler Parsons the difference maker? Maybe so. I mean, his ability to be a playmaker and that second unit is important. His ability to hit shots is important. Yeah, he has been a remarkable offensive player, certainly in comparison to what you would have had any kind of right to expect from him this year. And not only that, he's been a superb defensive player. I mean, his net rating is unbelievable. And as part of that bench group, this was something just kind of looking up, I was doing a little research for the pod. That bench unit that the Grizzlies normally go with, you know, when it's fully engaged, Mario Chalmers, Tyreke Evans, Dylan Brooks, Brandon Wright, and Chandler Parsons, that group is actually the best defensive group, five-man group, of any in the league among all the lineups that have played at least 50 minutes together, which is a pretty big number for lineups. Five-man lineups don't tend to rack up as many minutes because, you know, guys go in and out. You lose one guy, you change the whole five-man group. So those lineups don't rack up tons and tons of minutes even throughout the entire season. But among those that are in that group, and it's probably 35 or 40 lineups overall around the league that meet that criteria, that's the best defensive group out of any of them. And if you lower the threshold down to 30 minutes, it's the second best defensive group in the league. I mean, it's now been long enough, you know, 8 games played, because, you know, Chandler Parsons, of course, has missed the other two. But in those 8 games and those minutes, it's been so consistent that you have to go with it. And it's been against some good teams too. So I think that's a real thing. And when you take Parsons out of the mix and you shrink the rotation, it not only causes a problem for, you know, minutes and distribution of minutes and all that stuff, but you lose some playmaking, you lose some shooting, you force guys to play in different roles. You have to play Andrew Harrison a little bit, which is never a good thing. All that stuff kind of comes together, and it came together in the Lakers game on Sunday night to make for a bad outing. And just a bad outing. And you know, the difference was night and day with Saturday and Sunday. You know, the Grizzlies were very happy to get Mike Conley back, and it was good to see Mike Conley play, you know, both games this weekend without too much difficulty. So that is good news about that Achilles that is still bothering him, but he seems to have found a way to play through it. On Saturday, you saw a nice distribution of points, and Tyreke Evans again coming off the bench, and he's scoring. Man, Tyreke is such a weird player. The Grizzlies have not had anybody like him in a long time. You know, I'm not going to count Lance Stephenson as Tyreke, because Tyreke is much more effective. It can be frustrating, I imagine, to play with Tyreke, because he really gets so single-minded out there at times that you're not getting the ball, but the guy gets buckets, man, and you need him. You need him. He's not a typical Grizzly player. He's probably not the most natural fit for Fizdale in the way that he wants that offense to move. A lot of times, the things get pretty stagnant with him out there, but nobody on this team has the physicality and the ability to beat a guy off the dribble, the ability to finish consistently in traffic the way that Tyreke does. And when you throw in the fact that he's got this now kind of rejuvenated, renovated, and suddenly very effective three-point shot to go along with the driving ability, now he's really hard to guard. And you could see that in the fact that he gets in the game and he just starts getting buckets. He just starts getting points. It's a big weapon. It was very helpful on Saturday. It was pretty helpful, and it kept the Grizzlies just kind of, you know, in the game for a time on Sunday against the Lakers. There's no easy way to kind of work him in, because he's always going to be a little bit of a square peg in a round hole with the way that Fizdale wants the offense to work. But yeah, they need his buckets. They need him. So it's been interesting to kind of see how that has gone. I don't know that he can keep up this three-point barrage. I doubt it, honestly. But for now, it's really keeping the Grizzlies afloat in some of these games. And he's been good defensively. So is Chandler Parsons, for that matter. And without Parsons, you could tell there was a big difference. Grizzlies in the Lakers game, you know, largely, let's just kind of get down to brass tacks here. They just didn't appear to give a crap, to use a technical basketball term, for the majority of this game. And then they sort of turned it on down the stretch, and it was too little too late. I mean, it's not that simple. You know, there are a lot of other things involved. These guys are professionals. They're not, no one is, you know, screwing around out there. But the effort level against the Lakers was nothing like what it was against the Clippers. And it's been a consistent thing. You know that. If you're a Grizzly fan, that's been a very common theme from the Grizzlies for years. You know, you play up to the good opponents, you play down to the bad opponents. It's like clockwork. And they end up not taking those games seriously. They lose a few of them. Some of them they barely win. But they just make it so much harder for themselves. And usually those losses end up costing them down the stretch. It's the difference between a 5 seed and a 7 seed, or a 4 seed and a 7 seed, or whatever it may be. It may cost you home court advantage in the postseason. But it has not changed their approach to those games at all. For whatever reason, in spite of all the evidence that's out there, in spite of history, in spite of seeing what it has done for the team in years past, they just don't get it. They don't apply themselves. And David Fizdale has to sit there and watch the Lakers just drive to the basket and score at will. Drive to the basket, score at will. Brandon Ingram looking like LeBron James in the first half. Just all athleticism and arms and length and finishing and driving past everybody, and just he looked unbelievable. Grizzlies they're not capable, it seems, of really taking bad teams seriously and coming out and finishing the job the way that you need to, and coming out and just being committed to it, and you know, shutting the door early and finishing things off, making it much easier for themselves, getting a few wins. They just aren't capable of doing things the easy way. They always seem to have to do it the hard way. That's going to cost them. Marc Gasol was not very good tonight. Defensively, not very good. Jarrell Martin all over the place defensively. And again, you see the difference from game to game. The Clippers game, much more effective overall. But they can't keep that consistency going. And you kind of undo some of the good things that you did with that game on Saturday. Now, I mean, it's still going to help you in a tiebreaker situation, which could well happen with the Clippers. So, you know, all is not lost. I mean, God knows, you look around the league and you see a whole bunch of teams that are struggling that are likely to be really, really good. I mean, the Cavs here I am looking at specifically after another loss. I think this year it's going to be a little more up in the air. But knowing how competitive, and you do see it kind of shaken out this way, it's starting to get to where we thought it was going to. It's starting to get there after a little uncertain start. I mean, this is now 10 games in for the Grizzlies. Teams have played 10 or 11 games pretty much for the most part. And as it stands right now, I mean, the Grizzlies 6-4, but 5-5, i.e. one game back, puts you potentially in 12th place. Because the Nuggets, Lakers, Pelicans, Jazz all tied at 5-5. The Clippers are at 5-4. Spurs are at 6-4 along with the Blazers and the Grizzlies. Of course, the Blazers and the Grizzlies play tomorrow night. In Portland, you have the Thunder, who are 4-5 after the controversial game and the way that it ended against Portland yesterday. Everyone, even the Suns, have started to play reasonably well, although they're not going to make the playoffs, certainly. Only the Kings and the Mavericks are just beyond the pale, and the Grizzlies have lost to the Mavericks, the only team that has. I say that to say that this is shaping up exactly the way that we thought it would, that the bottom of the West is going to be tricky, that you're going to have a whole bunch of teams that are going to end up with that 40, probably 3-5 win total that are going to be duking it out for that final spot. And when you get to games where you should win and need to win and can't get it done, you got a problem. So whatever, it's been consistent with this group. And I don't know what the mentality is, the approach. You know, why they do this, I can't say, but they do. And it's been a consistent thing for them. Now, interesting to look at the comparison between the Grizzlies in the first half and the second half thus far through 10 games of the season. The Grizzlies defensively are only 18th in terms of net rating in the first half of games. But they make up for that by being 9th offensively. And they are a plus 3.3 in first halves of games. So they are a much better offensive team than defensive team in first halves. But what about second halves? Well, second half, the offensive rating plummets. Grizzlies are 23rd in the league offensively in the second half of games. at 100.4, but they make up for that by being the second best team defensively in second halves at just 94.7, which means their net rating is actually 5.7. It's better in the second half than it is in the first half, in spite of their offense plummeting, because defensively they are so much better in the second half. Now, why is that? Well, I would contend that the biggest reason for it is that they continue to get off to horrible starts with that starting lineup. And they've changed it, and that to me is the big news coming out of this weekend, other than Mike Conley's health being okay. The fact that that starting lineup has changed, that Dylan Brooks has been introduced into the starting lineup in place of Andrew Harrison. And the numbers are compelling to support that move, because we've seen that the Grizzlies have gotten off to bad starts. Their first quarter ratings are terrible. And basically from 2 through 4, they're pretty good, because you don't tend to see that starting lineup for all that much after that opening, you know, 6-7 minutes of the game. That's pretty much it. You'll see it maybe to begin the second half for a little bit, but that tends to be a shorter leash, if it happens at all. Sometimes Fizdale has started different lineups in the second half. But yeah, in the first quarter, the Grizzlies have a 109.8 defensive rating. The rest of the way, it is significantly worse. Second quarter, 99. Third quarter, 94.4. Fourth quarter, 95. So it's that first quarter that just drags everything down, and that tells you that you need a new starting lineup. And say no more. Here it comes. Dylan Brooks jumps into the starting lineup and immediately improves it. Brooks, and I tweeted out the numbers, but thus far, in somewhat limited numbers, but decent enough compared to the rest of the other five-man lineups out there, 33 minutes is quite a few for that group. The Grizzlies' original starting lineup had 91 minutes and was a minus 5.4 net rating. This new starting lineup is 14.4 to the positive. So that's nearly a 19-point difference between Dylan Brooks and Andrew Harrison in the starting lineup. And that stands to reason, because that's pretty much what Andrew Harrison is as a minus for the season. So it would just kind of stand to reason that you take him out as the worst starter in the NBA for the first week or so, and you put in Dylan Brooks, who may not necessarily be, any kind of a world beater at this point, but he's just, number one, he's not Andrew Harrison. Number two, he is competent and can move the ball and can shoot and can do some of the little things. It was something that I have to go back and you can feel free to send me an email, pedmiston@gmail.com, or a tweet at Peter Edmiston. I just couldn't think of another Grizzly rookie, in the last decade plus or more, who looked so ready, who looked so smooth, who looked like such a basketball player, like Dylan Brooks. I mean, there's no question that Brooks has a lot that he has to learn. There's no question that Brooks turns the ball over too much, that he fouls a little too often. He's got that little, that thing, the little shuffle that he does before he drives. He's been called for walks quite a bit. That's something that rookies have to deal with. The game is officiated a little bit differently in the NBA. Maybe he got used to that and got away with it in college, but he's not going to get away with it in the pros. That's all true. But considering his position, considering where he was drafted, and considering what he's done for this team, when he's in there, good things happen. It was the same way with the Laker game. And even though he didn't play especially well on a personal level against the Clippers, just his presence being there, the way that shook out the lineup, and the fact that Andrew Harrison did not play, tells you that that was the right move, and it was a move that needed to be made. It's a little harsh on Harrison, I guess, but the numbers just tell you that the team is much better when Andrew Harrison is not involved. And he played against the Lakers. I think Fizdale got a little desperate because of the foul trouble that Brooks was dealing with, and also just the way that the things were going. I don't know if he was reaching for the defensive card. Has not been a great defensive year for Andrew Harrison. Wasn't again. Harrison was a minus 11 in this ballgame in 9 minutes. That break glass in case of emergency use of Andrew Harrison now is not good, does not need to happen. And as I've said, I mean, with respect to Harrison, who I like, and he's worked his tail off to get to the NBA, I think you need to move him down or just move him out altogether once Ben McLemore and Wayne Selden come back. And McLemore was in South Haven over the weekend with the Hustle as he's on an injury rehab assignment, which is nice to see. Congratulations, by the way, to the Hustle for getting their first win on Sunday against the Salt Lake Stars. 102-99, had two games over the weekend down at the Lander Center, lost the opener, but won that second one. Props to my guys, Eli Savoy and John Roser, on the call of that on Facebook Live. If you want to check those out, the home games, they'll be broadcasting all of those. It was good stuff. I enjoyed it. Enjoyed watching Ivan Rabb, big game. Kobe Simmons, big game as well. Tresan Burrell, former University of Memphis Tiger, big game. So some good stuff from the Hustle, and it was cool to see. And I'm glad that it's made things a lot easier. You could tell even with the Ben McLemore stuff. You know, those guys, he and Rab. You know, Rab's gonna be playing, I would think, the majority of the time in South Haven, but. You know, the fact that those guys can practice with the main squad, then get sent down and practice with the Hustle for a while, come back up. Same thing with Kobe Simmons and those guys. I mean, it's a valuable thing for the Grizzlies, for those guys too, in their development of their careers. But it also just logistically makes it so much easier for them to be able to work into rehab and to get the most out of those resources that they've got, as opposed to last year when, you know, Wade Baldwin would get sent down to Iowa, he'd have to fly out to Des Moines or wherever and, you know, then come back, and you'd have to kind of commit to doing it for a little bit of a length of time. Whereas right now you can just send those guys down to practice and they get some work and get some extra reps against, you know, good, young, hungry guys. It's a really nice tool. And it's already being used to help in Ben McLemore's recovery. I mean, I think if he gets to the point where he can play, he should be playing for the main team. But I think in that little in between where it's like, you're not quite sure, I think it's probably good to give him a game down with the Hustle just to get some reps under his belt. But as soon as he can play, as soon as he is capable, or even close to capable, he needs to come up and spell the Grizzlies, because they need somebody to jump into that group, that starting group, to give them a spark and to give them some ability who's not Dylan Brooks, because I still think you need, it's too much too soon for Brooks, even though he I think has responded pretty well. You probably just need to bring him along slowly, don't need to rely too much on him. The sooner those guys get back, the better. McLemore, I think, will be back, fingers crossed, maybe by the end of this road trip. Same thing with Jermichael Green. Seems like Selden is a bit further off than those guys. But we shall see. Those are, you know, more hope than expectation. But maybe. Both guys seem to be recovering very well. So a frustrating night overall for the Grizzlies. They fall to 6-4 defensively. A lot of work to be done. Even though the Grizzlies have great numbers defensively, you still see efforts and nights like you saw last night where nothing clicks, where the effort just seems to be non-existent, where the switching that has worked, I think, really pretty well overall, just doesn't work and leaves guys on islands, and it's slow and non-responsive, which then puts people in bad shape. All that stuff, you see it, it's frustrating. It's part of, I would just say this, I see a lot of people that when these things go down, they start to say that, you know, go ahead and abandon the switching, abandon that stuff, what are the Grizzlies doing, et cetera, et cetera. And I would just tell you, you have to stick with it. You have to stay with it. That's the kind of defense that requires months and months of continued work throughout the season, and you know, really one that requires multiple seasons. You see, you know, the Warriors, you know, were on the vanguard of that, and it took them a while to get it squared away. They didn't just jump right into it. It sort of looks that way, but the rules and the way that it's handled, you've got to have the right personnel, and you've got to have patience to make it work. And the Grizzlies a lot of times have switched incorrectly or slowly. You saw that again in the game against the Lakers. But I think be patient. In the long run, you can already see the numbers are still really, really good for the Grizzlies. And in the long run, I think it'll make them a much more dangerous team in the postseason and a much more competitive team with the Warriors especially. You know, they've always played them tough, but they've always ended up with matchups and situations that didn't work out for them. I think this will help in that regard, having that ability to switch and be more multiple defensively. I don't know that it's going to make a huge difference, you know, with them or anyone else, but it is worth a shot, and I think it is the best way to play in the modern NBA. So coming up tomorrow on the podcast, we'll start to delve into some of the numbers. Since we're 10 games in, we'll get a little deeper into a few more numbers on individual level and also on team level, so we'll do all of that. As always, you want to get in touch with me, you can. I'm at Peter Edmiston on Twitter. You can email me, pedmiston@gmail.com. That's just my first initial and my last name, pedmiston@gmail.com. Thank you so much for listening. We'll do it again tomorrow. You have been Locked on Grizzlies.